Look up idiot in the dictionary. You know what you'll find?
A picture of me?
No! The definition of the word idiot, which you fucking are!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to I Do Movies Badly, a podcast exploration of my cinematic ignorance. I am your host, Jim Rohner, and despite being an amateur film critic since 2006, I am woefully ignorant of many films, filmmakers, and genres that consensus has deemed important, and thus I have created this podcast to document my journey into cinematic edification. This month I'm exploring the films of Paul Verhoeven, as recommended by Matt Bradley Shurgi, and this week's episode I'll be talking about Verhoeven's 1992 erotic thriller, Basic Instinct. A little bit of housekeeping before we get into it. Number one, most importantly, I apologize for the short delay in the posting of this episode, but life caught up with me a little bit. I was quite busy, some things because of prior engagements that could not be moved, and other just things that I did not anticipate, and so I had to push this by a day, so I do apologize for that. Any of you rabid listeners who are, I'm sure, sitting desperately by your computer, constantly hitting refresh on your browser or opening and closing iTunes to see when the latest episode would be available and were sorely disappointed, I apologize to you listeners who don't exist in that way that I've just depicted you, because nobody like that exists for this podcast, I'm pretty sure. Either way, I am apologetic for the fact that there is a delay, because I am a man of routine, and so I don't necessarily like breaking it, especially when it comes to this. But, you know, life is what happens when you're making other plans. And then also, you may have already heard, but because it is a somewhat chilly day in Brooklyn, despite the fact that it is the middle or late April, my radiator is on because the boiler in the building has not been turned on yet. My faithful companion, Bubble Guts, is going to be chiming in throughout this episode, so I apologize for the audio quality of this episode. Other than that, that's pretty much all the housekeeping I got, so why don't we talk about Basic Instinct, which is undeniably a trashy movie. In other late-breaking news, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. But yeah, I guess Matt had warned me, other people had sort of warned me that Basic Instinct was trashy, and it is trashy. It is an unapologetically and cannot be misinterpreted trashy, pulpy, erotic movie. And I kind of appreciate how unapologetic and I dare I say maybe bold and brash and in your face it is about what it is. Like, it doesn't have any illusions about what kind of movie it is, and it declares it right up front with the very opening scene, which is a naked Sharon Stone on top of a naked Bill Cable fucking each other's brains out until the point of climax, in which she reaches under the blanket, the duvet cover, whatever you want to call it, and stabs him repeatedly in the face, courtesy of a prosthetic face made by Rob Bottin. Rob Bottin, of course, a prosthetics effects guy, well known for The Thing, Fight Club, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. It is a lot of sex right away and a lot of violence right away, and it's kind of declares right away, this is the kind of movie that this is going to be. And if you're off-put or offended by that scene, you're going to be off-put and offended by the entire rest of the movie. And also, listen, I'm a red-blooded man, just like the rest of you red-blooded men. I'm sorry, that assumes that every one of my listeners is a heterosexual male, which I don't mean to assume that, but this is all a roundabout way of me saying I'm not necessarily opposed to starting a movie with a naked, very beautiful Sharon Stone. She is a sight to behold in this movie. But it is just sort of, it declares right away, hey, this is what this movie is going to be. And I kind of had to laugh at myself that this is what we're starting with. And then I also sort of lulled myself into thinking that that despite that, Basic Instinct would be more than what it is, which it's not, but I'll get into it in a little bit. But I guess I should also say that how this movie what this movie declares right away, not just in the fact of how it's going to set the tone with the sex and the violence, but it's also going to set the tone with a mystery which isn't really that big of a mystery, because this naked woman who is riding this man, her hair is covering her face, and so we don't see who she is. And it's like, oh, who could this wonderfully attractive but yet deadly woman be? And the film, I suppose, unfolds in such a way where you are led to believe that it is a mystery until the final reveal. I will get into details as to later why that is not the case and why this is a mystery, which actually doesn't really matter, not because of the twist at the end. You know, what am I trying to say here? The film makes it so. It's constructed and written in such a way where the mystery or the revelation of the mystery doesn't matter. And I say that in a negative way, not in an affirming way. But also, so it, you know, we have this opening scene where it's kind of like, ooh, I wonder who this killer could be. And then shortly after that, we are introduced to Sharon Stone's character, Catherine Tremell. Is it Tremell? Whatever. Sharon Stone's character. I'm just going to continuously refer to her as Sharon Stone's character. sort of like, ooh, I wonder if this is the killer. And then we are introduced to a character later on. It's like, ooh, maybe this is the killer. But it's like, really, no. Doesn't matter if you introduce a blonde wig late in the game. We've seen both of those characters sans clothing. This is not actually a mystery. Once again, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'll get into that later. But I will say, switching back gears to where I was, I had maybe talked myself into the fact that despite this opening scene, Basic Instinct was going to be more than just titillation, more than just that, for two reasons. For also because of the scene that comes right after that is the scene in which we are introduced to Nick, Michael Douglas, as the detective character, and the way that the dialogue is written and that the characters perform it in the interplay, it's very snappy. It's very humorous, and it has like a, not a satirical tone, but it certainly has a feeling, like kind of a jovial feeling of homage to sort of like a hard-boiled detective movies of the 1940s and the 1950s, with how snappy it is, with how quick everyone responds to each other, and with just how gleefully these guys are going about their work and joking, excuse me, making jokes about a very sexual homicide in the crime scene. It just sort of had a lighthearted, almost sort of tongue-in-cheek nature. So I'm like, oh, maybe this is, knowing Paul Verhoeven, knowing that he would ultimately go on to make Starship Troopers, and knowing that he also made RoboCop, is thinking like, okay, maybe what we got here with Basic Instinct is a satire. Ignoring the voice in my head that was saying, yes, but this was written by Joe Esterhaas, I kind of pushed that one aside and said, no, maybe Basic Instinct is going to be a satire. Maybe a satire of, who knows, detective movies, maybe a satire of erotica. I wasn't really sure, but I was willing to give it the benefit of the doubt that it was going to be something more than just a trashy erotic thriller because of that scene. And then also because of, in conjunction with the fact that my episode that I talked about last week, or the film that I talked about in the last episode, that's what I wanted to say, was Katie Tipple, in which I, despite what some listeners may say, was a film that I don't believe used sex in a titillating manner, or at least not in an entirely titillating manner. Certainly in the context of our lead character in that, Katie, eventually came to the sex trade and came to sex work out of not even emotional, but out of a narrative necessity. It was something that she settled on, something that she had to do as a compromise, as a sacrifice, and sure, there is nudity, but I saw Katie Tipple as a film which largely used sex not to titillate the audience, but to have a discussion on the power dynamic between classes and between sexes in that time and place. So I was like, well, I saw some maturity in that Paul Verhoeven film and how he used sex, so maybe that maturity is going to be here in Basic Instinct as well. And I allowed myself to become convinced that there was another level to what I was seeing. And then I realized there is not another level to Basic Instinct. Basic Instinct is not trying to, in my opinion, as far as I can tell, is not trying to comment on anything, is not trying to be anything other than a surface level discussion of genre, of the things in genre that excite us on a visceral level. And I was keyed into that when I realized that there are four nude scenes in the first 45 minutes of this movie, two of which are sex scenes, and then the other two of which are just very voyeuristic, with Michael Douglas's character kind of leering and peering and just taking in Sharon Stone's character. Four nude scenes in the first 45 minutes means, if my math is correct, and I'm pretty sure it is, at that point there was a nude scene once every, 11 and a half minutes. This movie knows what it's going to give to you, all that it has to offer, and it intends to offer it up to you as much as it possibly can. And so I sort of realized that, yeah, so sex in this movie is not being used in the way that it was being used in Katie Tipple, in which that was an evolution of the narrative and sort of a not embodiment, but sort of a, something that the character eventually had to arrive at in the sense of her sort of reaching a turning point in her life and in the story. And Basic Instinct is just a movie which really has aspirations to be softcore pornography. Written by a guy like Joe Esterhaas and directed by a guy like Paul Verhoeven. And I think also what clued me in, not what clued me into this, but, you know, another example of how I could tell that there is no maturity to the sex, how it is just sort of trashy titillation really on a visceral level, is the rape scene. Not just the fact that there is a rape scene included, but the fact that it is a rape scene that was clearly written by a dude. And what I mean by that is, one, there's no subtlety in this. I mean, this is a scene in which there is a very clear no, and yet the rape proceeds anyway, and there's really no consequences from it. Sure, she gets upset and throws him out of the apartment, but they reconcile a little bit later on in the movie, and as far as I can tell, there are no lingering psychological or emotionally damaging consequences that occurs from the fact that there was a man who wanted to engage in sex, and the woman did not want to, and the man took it anyway. So it's one, the fact that there is a rape scene that has no emotional or psychological consequences, because instead, point number two, it is used as a sort of hack device to sort of show how our main protagonist, Nick, as played by Michael Douglas, is, I guess, changing as a character, how this woman played by Sharon Stone is really getting inside of his head, because she, you know, Gene Triplehorn's character makes a point of saying, like, you've never done that before, or something to that effect. So it's supposed to cue us in and, like, oh, if this is something he's never done before, then what could be the change in his life? Oh, well, the only change is that this very seductive, possibly homicidal woman has come into his life. So it's used as a narrative device, which is so fucking cheap and so demeaning, to signify that our male character is going through a transition. So non-consensual sex is used to show how our character is going about through his emotional arc, which is just an incredibly immature and shitty way of depicting a rape scene, basically. I mean, a rape scene is so hard to explain away or justify in a movie. In fact, I can think right now of all the movies, well, not all the movies, but I can think, but, you know, some of these scenes or movies that are occurring to me right now that have rape sequences in them, the one common thing is they're all incredibly difficult to watch and sit through. And then number two, it's also like, you know, can you really justify the reason that this is included in this movie? I suppose some people could. No, I don't even know. I don't want to be the one to say, like, well, I guess you can make an argument for this one, because there is not anything occurring to me right now. There are people out there who might make an argument for something. I'm not comfortable making or engaging in that argument, but it's just I completely lost track of what I was getting at here now. But it's just a tremendously shitty thing to do to include it in this movie. Oh, I get what I'm saying now. So it's incredibly hard to include that even in a movie which takes itself incredibly seriously, something like Irresistible, perhaps. Or Irreversible, I'm sorry, Irreversible, the Gaspar Noé film starring Monica Bellucci. So, so in a movie like this, which is just from the get-go declaring to you that it is trying to titillate you, that it is trying to excite and arouse you or be provocative or evocative, whatever word you want to describe it, it's even shittier that it is included in this. And it's really upsetting that it's supposed to be used as this device to kind of like show something about our character, our male character, without engaging or even necessarily caring about any consequences that it would have on it. I can't even say that it doesn't care about the consequences, because there are no consequences to it. It is used as a device to show how our male character is changing, and that's incredibly upsetting to me. It is very clearly a scene, a rape scene, which is written by a guy, because it's used as a... not even a power thing, but you do even kind of get the sense afterwards that, like, while they're lying there on the floor next to each other, that, like, that, hey, maybe she wasn't all that upset about it. You know, I guess they try and pay lip service to her being upset by, once again, she throws him out of the apartment, and he tries to kind of put his hand on her, or her arm, or his arm around her, and she kind of pushes it off. But it's just way too... It still sits unwell with me that this is sort of how that it's included in there, and let's even take it up to a let's remove the moral and emotional and psychological quagmire that including a rape scene is, and let's just even look at it from a superficial logistical level. In the sense of where it comes in the movie, which is very early on in the movie. If this is a scene which is trying to at least kind of show, like, hey, here's how our protagonist is changing, and or I guess if you want, you can make the argument for him devolving, or, you know, him, you know, his character degrading away, which I don't think you can make, because this movie jumps through hoops to kind of show you how he is not a good person. It comes way too early in the movie, because there has not been a relationship established between these two characters where him engaging in such an activity is seen as different. You know, there's a very blatant line, like I said, where she's like, you've never done that before. But, like, hell, I know Joe Esterhaus was paid $3 million for the screenplay, so it kind of surprised me. It's like, you know, show, don't tell. Like, you know, if a scene like that is going to be included, and it's intended to kind of show, here's how our character is being negatively influenced by this femme fatale, then establish a scene early on in which you have the two of them engaging in something which is sensual and loving and fucking consensual, so that way later on you can see the sharp contrast between these two scenes. It's not a one-to-one correlation, because the movie I'm going to compare it to has two scenes which are consensual sex scenes. But think about A History of Violence, in which there are two sex scenes involving Viggo Mortensen and... is it Maria Bello? I don't know. I'm a little bit upset that I'm blanking on the co-star's name. But they have two sex scenes... one of which, early in the film, they kind of establish how innocent and genuine that, like, this family and this environment and the Viggo Mortensen character is, in which, you know, it's a role play. You know, she dresses up like a cheerleader, like, you know, the high school cheerleader, and they engage in sex, which is sexy, but it's also innocent and sensual and touching. And then later on, once we've later on in the film, once we figured out what kind of person Viggo Mortensen is, or at least what his past was like, what kind of character he was like, there's another sex scene which is very rough, because it's very hard, and it's on the stairs, and it's I believe that his wife is kind of wearing dark colors, and everything about it tonally and emotionally is just very different, and there's a sharp contrast. The comparison between the two of them kind of shows how emotionally these two characters have changed, how their relationship has changed. It just sort of emphasizes that difference between the world we had and the world we live in now. Instead, Basic Instinct is just kind of like, hey, here's a rape scene, and we're going to tell you why this rape scene is supposed to be significant to the narrative. And so even if it weren't troublesome and upsetting that a rape scene was even included, which it is, it doesn't even work for the purpose that it was intended to do on just a script and logistical level. So that was probably, if not the nail in the coffin, then the thing that at least convinced me, like, okay, this is just supposed to be a superficial dive into the desires of the flesh, and that's pretty much it. And I think I don't really want to talk about this thing anymore, but I guess I will say, emotional dynamics in general in this movie, not just in that upsetting scene, but the emotional dynamics in general in this movie don't work for me primarily. And I don't know if this is consensus, if I'm contrarian to this one, but didn't work for me because Michael Douglas didn't work for me as the lead character in this role, and I don't know what it is about him, but there's just something about his look, his voice, his delivery of lines. It might even be something as superficial as the fact that it was hard for me to believe their relationship, because at the point that this movie came out, he was pushing 50, and I don't know, there was just a, I don't know, there was just something about him that his character didn't make sense to me. I think it was a wrong casting choice to get Michael Douglas involved in this. And I wish I could explain further, but there was something about his depiction of Nick which made me not necessarily like him, not able to relate to him, and not really care about whether he succeeds on his quest, whether he figures out the mystery, whether he solves the case or not. I mean, the script is also once again doing him no favors because, he's a bad detective. let's get that one out of the way. There's not really an arc for him that I see. He kind of starts out as a guy where there's hints that he was not crooked, but there's hints that he has problems. I mean, you know, they make references to his drinking. They make references to the him accidentally killing a tourist, shooting and killing a tourist. And so we kind of get this sense, but this is all stuff that we are told, and then we are told he was doing so much better. Oh, you know, I haven't had a drink for this much. And so we're told, like, no, he was bad, but he's better now. But I don't see that. I don't see anything in this character which establishes him as, hey, he's either a good, relatable person, or like, hey, maybe he's just on the fence right now, and a strong breeze one way or the other will make him, you know, one way or the other. Because I think it has to get back to the fact that this is pretty much a morally bankrupt movie. But Michael Douglas, I just didn't believe, I didn't connect to, and I don't think that he was particularly strong in this movie, which is a shame, because in contrast, Sharon Stone is fantastic in this movie. Oh my God. I tweeted about this. I said this in a text message exchange with a friend of mine who likes this movie, that I said, Sharon Stone, like, it seems like, looking back on Sharon Stone's career at this point, I mean, with this movie, with Sliver, with The Quick and the Dead, and with Casino, Sharon Stone was the most beautiful woman in the entire world. I mean, not just physically, but also just in terms of her charisma and her talent and the presence that she brought to the screen. Oh my God, I mean, she commands the scenes that she is in. She is the focus of it. She makes she makes, just not that she was relatively unknown at this point, but this is kind of what I think that this was one of her biggest roles, because before this, you know, how she got noticed, or at least or why she was used, was Paul Verhoeven really wanted to use her because of her role in Total Recall. So this was kind of I think one of her first ones where it was like, hey, starring like Sharon Stone as, you know, as like her name over the credits along with Michael Douglas. And she makes Michael Douglas look like an amateur in every single scene that not only in every scene that they are in together, but on her. Well, there's not really many scenes where she's without him. But I will say, I guess then stepping back, she is in the spotlight in every scene that she's in, like sort of, in a analytical, cinematic, snooty kind of standpoint, sort of emasculating the male characters because they are not the focus, they are not the center, they are not the ones we want to pay attention to when they are on screen together. We want to pay attention, or at least I wanted to pay attention to Sharon Stone. I was fascinated by everything she did because she has such a presence, she has such a power. She is, yes, oh my God, she's gorgeous and she's a pleasure to look at, but she is... just to bask in what she brings here and brings out this character who is powerful, who is confident, and who is completely shameless and absolutely bold in how she recognizes that she has a power over the men in this movie, both in terms of her physicality and her psychology and how she lords that over them and manipulates them. And it's absolutely wonderful to see that. And to see that kind of play out, especially considering that this was a movie which is so upfront and so bold about its depictions of sex and its attitude towards sex, in a time in 1992 when the AIDS epidemic was sort of, had everyone sort of nervous and very skittish when it came to the topic of sex. Nobody really wanted to engage with it. People were kind of terrified of it. And then also, excuse me, in this era where there was, you know, still the transition between, or you know, from a Reagan conservatism to George Bush's conservatism, and there was this this cinematic movement in America which was kind of like, let's tell not even wholesome stories, because Rambo was in the late 80s and all that kind of stuff, but like, let's tell these stories which sort of reinforce our ideals as a moral authority in America. And sex was certainly something that was shunned or ignored, not engaged with, and here comes this movie which is so bold about, you know, its depictions of sex, and it's grappling with it and just shoving it in your face. And at the center of that is Sharon Stone, who is a powerhouse to behold. I mean, especially, you know, in the interrogation scene. I mean, sure, everyone can, you know, everyone is aware of, and we can talk about the crotch shot, if you will, and because it is famous, I don't know if I necessarily feel comfortable describing it as an iconic shot, but everybody is aware of that shot. I was aware of that shot years before I saw the movie because I saw National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon 1, in which, underrated parody, by the way, I should say that, starring Emilio Estevez and Samuel L. Jackson, and a delightful turn by Tim Curry as the villain, but where there is an interrogation scene in which Kathy Ireland is wearing a similar outfit, and she's in a chair, and she spins around in the chair with her back to the men interrogating her, and then it cuts to these men, you know, kind of like looking over her shoulder. When the chair spins back around, there's a beaver sitting in the chair, which as a kid, I did not understand what that meant at all, but I do understand it now, and I also do understand the allusion in National Lampoon's Little Weapon 1 to Kathy Ireland's character having a fascination with an ice pick, to the extent of which she carves, I believe, an ice sculpture of an animal out of a giant block of ice while she is frustratingly airing her grievances to somebody. But anyway, so we have that scene, and what everyone thinks about in that scene is the fact that, like, oh my God, bare vagina right there on screen in a mainstream movie. Which, sure, had a hard R, but in a mainstream Hollywood movie, there is full frontal crotch of a woman. And sure, that's part of it, but there's also such a... Ooh, fascinating dynamic at play in that scene, in which, like I said, the men are trying to trap her. You know, they're trying to ask her questions to kind of get information. I mean, it's an interrogation. They're trying to get her to admit inadvertently that she is guilty of this murder. And she's throwing it back in their face. I mean, they're asking questions, and the answers that she's giving is just, she is removing the power from these men. She is not just bending them to her will, in the sense of, like, using her body and using her sexuality to sort of catch them off guard, but then she's also using her mind and her psychology to attack them back. And to kind of further demean them by kind of signaling to them, like, you are not going to get anything out of me. You don't have the power here. I have the power here. And it's one woman being interrogated by, what, probably five or six men. And who's in control? Who has the power in that scene? She does. And that's absolutely fascinating. And also, I think it's great the way that Paul Verhoeven shoots that scene, where there's a lot of movement. There's a lot of the camera panning from one guy to the next and kind of, like, really quick movements or zooming in or kind of dolling in real quick, you know, to I think Michael Douglas when there's a question being asked. And there's a lot of camera movements in that scene. It's a very frenetic, kinetic kind of scene. And I'm not saying this is something Paul Verhoeven intended, but what I was reminded of was the uncertainty and the nervousness that a young boy might experience when he, let's say, stumbles upon a unscrambled, you know, Playboy channel when he's younger, or finds a Playboy magazine and, you know, in tucked away in somebody's dresser drawer, or just that first really, like, excited but scared exploration of sex for the first time. There's like a nervousness and the camera moving back and forth. I almost kind of saw it as this young kid kind of looking over both shoulders to kind of see, like, is anybody watching? Is anybody here? Can anybody see this? And because there's a nervousness and excitement, but then also there's a fear, a big fear of entering into unknown territory, something which is physically exciting, but also which is like, this is, I don't know what this is. This is something I've never experienced before. And I think what I saw reflected in that scene was these men had never experienced this before, not just in the sense of how physically attractive the woman that they're talking to is, but also in the sense of, we are not used to being in a situation where we are not in control, where we are not in power here. And I found that to be, in my opinion, the best directed sequence, like, you know, kind of the best part of that entire movie, and just how much control and how much emotion was evoked from the way that Paul Verhoeven decided to direct that scene. I think it's absolutely fascinating. But I think in terms of my compliments for Basic Instinct and the things that I liked about it, it sort of begins and ends with Sharon Stone just being a presence and being a force, because this script has a lot of problems. Not surprising, I know, coming from the guy who wrote Jade and who wrote Showgirls and who wrote Burn, Hollywood Burn, an Alan Smithy film. But there are so many problems with this script, not the least of which is, let's get this one out of the way first. Basic Instinct exists in a world where DNA evidence is apparently not a thing at all. And I mean, this was 1992. DNA evidence was, you know, it may not have been as prevalent as it is now, but it was definitely not an unknown, mystery, magical force. I mean, this was something that people were using in crime scene investigations fairly regularly, which would have solved this case immediately. Like, hey, we've got this ice pick. Let's look on DNA evidence for it. Oh, sure enough, it's this woman. Okay, let's arrest her. This movie's done in like 15 minutes, basically. So that is a tremendous plot hole, which I believe even Joe Esterhaas admits to this day, like, yeah, that's a big problem. Suspension of disbelief is one thing. Really, like, you know, ignorance is something else entirely. But then also the script is thinks that it's far more clever than it actually is. In the sense of it seems to try and be cute with a sort of self-awareness, you know, like, especially this whole idea of like, a writer being, a woman who is, Sharon Stone's character, who is a writer of crime novels, which, you know, a lot of which is based on things that she knows, which is why she chooses to hang out with all these, unsavory characters. There's sort of a cleverness there, in the sense of like a woman who is involved in these crimes or can write about these crimes before, but because she's involved in these crimes. But then also it gets a little bit too navel-gazing in the sense of being too cutesy about recognizing that, like, you know, there's sort of a, how am I trying to explain this? The film sort of has a self-awareness in the sense of, like, Esther Haas almost writes these characters as though they're almost aware that they are characters in a mystery or a crime story, especially in the sense of how, calling out, you know, plot points that are going to happen, like, or bringing subtext up to text by saying things like, because she wrote the novel, she's going to use the fact, or because she wrote the novel, I'm sorry, I'm doing a terrible job of explaining this, so let me step back here, take a breath. Whew. So, you know, obviously, the murder of the ice pick, is something that occurred in one of her books, and so everyone makes the point of, well, not everyone, but they make the point of saying, hey, she's going to say that one of the points, or that she could not be the killer because I am doing a really terrible job of explaining this. I'm sorry. My mind is all over the place right now. But basically, by writing a scene of an ice pick murder in her book, that kind of frees her from suspicion of being the killer because, well, obviously I would never do it because you would immediately suspect me. Because I wrote a murder scene like that. So someone makes a point of that, she makes a point of that, and just the fact that it sort of hints on these things, which would be subtext in any good or subtle movie, in the sense of like, hey, you know, it's not something that we, the audience member, can like figure out on our own. We're sitting there thinking like, oh, that's really interesting that there's a, that she wrote a novel with the same kind of murder in real life because she would never do it. Like, it's not something that we piece together on our own. The film just sort of tells us that. The film tells us the plot points or the narrative hinges by telling us the narrative hinges. It's just, it's a little bit too cute and a little bit too on the nose for me. And especially when with a thing like, when the Nick is interrogated later on, and a lot of the answers he gives, and a lot of the camera movements sort of echo the earlier interrogation scene with her, including when he repeats the line verbatim, when he goes to light up a cigarette and he's told that he can't smoke in here. He said, "What are you gonna do, arrest me for smoking," or something to that effect, which was the exact same thing she said earlier, and it's kind of like, eh? Eh? Get it? Do you get it, guys? Do you get how he's, you know, kind of imitating her behavior? It's too cutesy. It's too, you know, it thinks it's much more clever than it actually is. But it sort of has to try to be that superficial cleverness because, once again, there is nothing more to Basic Instinct than just its superficial appeal. And also, like I said, when I hit on this with the Nick character earlier in discussing that awful rape scene, it has to tell us how these characters are changing. It has to be very in your face about that because it doesn't do a good enough job of setting up the Nick character and of kind of letting us know. This movie, like halfway through this movie, I get a clear picture of, if not her past, then what kind of character Sharon Stone's character is. Nick, I have no idea. I know he made a mistake. He accidentally shot a tourist. I know he battled with alcoholism. But that's all stuff that was told to me by the supporting characters to kind of get a sense of who he is. But, like, I don't know who Nick is. I don't get it. Like, he's just kind of an archetypical character He's kind of like a supporting character that is playing out a lead character part. And I don't get a sense of who he is, and because of that, I don't care about him. And I'm kind of rooting for the Sharon Stone character. I found myself hoping as this movie went along, I really hope Nick dies, because I don't know what he's doing here. I don't care if he succeeds. I don't necessarily care what happens to this guy. I think this is also, I guess, an organic point to kind of talk about how I said at the beginning, the ending doesn't matter. And by the ending, I mean that reveal that the ice pick was under the bed, and so Sharon Stone was the killer the whole time. That shot doesn't really matter. It doesn't change anything. It's not a twist. It's not a reveal, because It is a mystery which is sort of set up to, well, let's see, because the mystery that this film tries to set up, or the question that it tries to raise that we're supposed to be asking ourselves the answer to the entire time, is, was the killer Sharon Stone, or was the killer Gene Triplehorn? This is, again, not really a mystery, because we've seen both of those characters naked. We know what the murderer at the beginning looked like naked, and Gene Triplehorn doesn't look like that. So to us as the audience, it shouldn't be a mystery at all. But once again, let's suspend that disbelief and just say, like, okay, for these characters, this is the mystery they're trying to solve. Specifically for Nick, the mystery he's trying to solve is, who is the murderer? And it's written in such a way where it's like, could it be Sharon Stone, or could it be Gene Triplehorn? The problem being is that it's written where either one of them could be the killer. And not even in the sense of, like, you know, if that camera pans down and there's no ice pick, versus the camera panning down as it is now and there is an ice pick, it doesn't really change anything at all. Because if the, well, and I guess you can make the argument, like, well, if the ice pick wasn't there, then, hang on, let me think about this here. So if the ice pick wasn't there, then Gene Triplehorn is dead, and Nick came to the or Nick did the right thing by killing her. He got the killer. Great, the killer is dead. But we've arrived at a point where, in a morally bankrupt film, okay, so Sharon Stone was never the killer. So then, what was the purpose of going through that entire exercise anyway? So that doesn't really, like, okay, well, fine. Everything is confirmed, and everything is okay. But then the ice pick being there at the end, it's also like, okay, but everyone believes her to be the killer. But we knew from the beginning that she wasn't. So this just kind of confirms. I'm not doing a great job of explaining it. So what I'm going to do, and I knew that I wasn't going to be doing a good job of explaining it. So I wrote down these notes from, as always, Roger Ebert, because Roger Ebert always does a fantastic job of saying the things that I'm trying to say, but better. And this is from his review of Basic Instinct, which is, and this is in the context of when this movie was being filmed, representatives from the LGBT community were complaining about the movie, specifically its depiction of gay and lesbian characters, or I should say gay, specifically lesbian characters, which, side note, this is another reason why this script has problems, because, like a lot of movies in the early 90s, we can say this now, we can say this now in retrospect, we should have been saying it a lot more en masse that back then, but the gay characters in this movie are depicted as, or always associated with, malicious things. Sharon Stone and her girlfriend Roxy, or Rocky, they're obviously very fucked up, malicious, evil people, and they are lesbians. And then also, even the Gene Triplehorn character, her character starts being suspected, her character starts being tainted, her character starts being suspicious when it's revealed that she had a lesbian experience. So everyone in this movie that has a homosexual orientation has something about them which is looked upon as bad or evil or unsavory. But in that context of the LGBT community complaining about it, this Ebert had this to say, so these people were spoiling the ending of the movie to try and ruin it for people. And he says, but the ending of Basic Instinct is so arbitrary that it hardly matters. This is not a movie where the outcome depends upon the personality or behavior of the character. It's just a wind-up machine to jerk us around. And he goes on later to say, but if the last shot had provided the opposite answer, as in if there was no ice pick there, it still would have been consistent with everything that had happened in the film. Each and every shred of evidence throughout the entire movie supports two different conclusions. And so I suppose someone could say, like, oh, no, that's clever. That's good writing, that it could take a different path and arrive at the same conclusion. Or I should say take the same path and arrive at different conclusions. But I just see that as that ending scene not having any stakes then in terms of what Esterhaz chose to be the reveal at the end. It's just essentially flipping a coin because one way or another, that doesn't change anything that the characters have went through. It doesn't change any kind of journey that we have gone through as the audience, that the characters have gone through. It doesn't change anything. It's actually more lazy than it is clever. And by more, I mean it is lazy and not clever. And so that's... And so I guess in the end, it was... I think Basic Instinct is just a trashy, pulpy, superficially sexually evocative piece of entertainment. But I do have to emphasize entertainment because I wasn't bored watching this movie. There are moments of genuine wit. There are moments of great performances, specifically once again from Sharon Stone. There are some well-directed sequences, and it's a very sexy movie to watch. I was entertained by this movie. I won't go so far as to say that I like it. I won't go so far as to say that I'll necessarily plan on watching it again or would recommend it to people. Maybe some certain people. But it's not a... But I was entertained by it. But I enjoyed my viewing experience. And yeah, most of my enjoyment came from a... let's say superficial, biological, but albeit sort of immature viewing experience. But on that level, it kept me entertained. I started it late, and I watched the entire thing. I didn't fall asleep like I did more than a few times sitting through the Tarkovsky month. It's a trashy, morally bankrupt, worthless movie, but that I also found entertaining. And that's strange, because that's not really... that's kind of undiscovered territory when it comes to I Do Movies Badly. Not to say that I certainly haven't liked every movie that I've sat through. I certainly haven't been entertained by every movie that I've sat through, but I can't really think of anything that I've sat through which I could consider trashy. And certainly if I have, and listeners, feel free to correct me if I have watched something on this podcast which was trashy, but certainly something which I find sort of mostly irredeemable and yet still entertaining, and that's a weird place to be in because not a lot of art, and I guess it's up for debate whether this is art or not, whether that is a comfortable or a role that we can assign something comfortable and being trashy, but also being entertaining. I guess if it is trashy, it sort of has to be entertaining because you can't enjoy it on any other level than just, did it provide you with titillation? And it did. It did provide me titillation. That's what it was trying to do, and that's what it did. So it is, in a way, a successful film, even if not a good one. Now, the conversation as to whether that makes Basic Instinct worthwhile or good, or whether more movies like that should be made, that's not a conversation I'm going to engage in here. I'll leave it up to you to kind of decide, but certainly it is an interesting little film. Also a little bit too long, to be honest with you. Another script problem now that I'm getting into it. But it is a successful film. It tells you what it's trying to do right away, and then it does that, and it succeeds. It succeeds when a lot of movies fail. A lot of mainstream movies, especially. Does that make it good or bad? Not really sure. If you want to watch Basic Instinct again, it's free to stream on Netflix. As Matt and I established, it is not the unrated version. It is the R-rated version, which I believe was achieved just by cutting out 45 seconds of sex scene. Not sure where you can find the unrated version, but I'm sure if you look hard enough on the internet, you can find it. That's the only place where we'll be able to find it for free, but it is free there on Netflix. Otherwise, if you want to purchase it or rent it, you can do so on Amazon, iTunes, Google Play, Vudu, and you can also buy it on Fandango now and in the Microsoft and PlayStation stores. But why would you do that when you can just get it for free on Netflix? You're subscribed already. But that does it for Basic Instinct. One thing I will say is this movie made me want to rewatch Casino. Because I know Sharon Stone, once again, I have a new appreciation for Sharon Stone as an actress, and she's fucking phenomenal in Casino. So I kind of wanted to watch that again. So maybe I'll do that sometime in the near future. But always, of course, interested in what you might have to say about this movie, about the last movie, about Paul Verhoeven, about anything having to do with this podcast in general. Shoot me an email at youdomoviesbadly@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at NolanFixesTeeth. You can find back episodes of I Do Movies Badly both on BattleshipRetention.com, where you can go to podcasts and the I Do Movies Badly drop-down menu, and you can leave comments on past episodes, which there was a very lively debate, going on in the introduction of Paul Verhoeven episode in which two listeners, well, three, including Matt, were going back and forth in regards to the value of satire in Starship Troopers and whether it was even meant to be satire or whether Paul Verhoeven was trying to make a serious movie the entire time and kind of pulled a Tommy Wiseau and tried to kind of retroactively change it and be like, no, I was trying to make satire the whole time. Or you can also go on iTunes and find back episodes as well, where as far as I can tell, there is not a lively debate going on. There's just old episodes and a place where you can leave a star rating and comments, of course, which I always appreciate, so... that does it for Basic Instinct. Be sure to tune in next week where I will be wrapping up Paul Verhoeven month with the aforementioned 1997 Starship Troopers, and will hopefully I will be just a little bit less ignorant.
Look up idiot in the dictionary. You know what you'll find?
A picture of me?
No! The definition of the word idiot, which you fucking are!